The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
It is. And guess what? It's Friday. Yeah. This week seemed to last forever. And maybe it's because last week was short. I don't know. But whatever. It's Friday. So we're going to do things a little differently today. I've got some stuff to go through with you. And of course, I got to, you know, we talked about this earlier in the week. Well, on Tuesday with Laffy, as the gremlins seem to have been invading my studio, and Mercury is in retrograde. And sure enough, you know, I loaded a whole slew of audio onto this little program that I have on one computer, and I look up and nothing's there. I mean, it says the clips are there, but the time for each of the clip is zero. So for some reason, this computer is not picking up this stuff from that folder. We'll get through it. I just, you know, the gremlins are out again today, of course. Yeah, because it's a day ending in a Y. Anyway, I'm excited because our guest today is a dear, dear old friend, and I mean old. Some of you know, you probably all know, that I used to, in a previous life, work in Los Angeles. I, from 1990 to 94, was the producer of the Mark and Brian program. And when I started with them, they were just, you know, an LA-based show at KLOS. And during the years I was there, they got went syndicated. They were on, I think at the height, they were on around 21 stations. But they were, Mark and Brian were inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame in 2020. Of course, it was our lost COVID year. So it was a screwy situation where there wasn't an actual in-person ceremony. It was all over Zoom. I hope they, you know, when things get back to normal, if they ever do, they do have like a new ceremony for the 2020 inductees, because, you know, Mark and Brian really need to be in the room with Glenn Beck. But I digress. That was facetious, in case you were wondering. But they deserve all the accolades. So today I get to really congratulate Mark and actually thank him for, for seeing the talent in me and taking me on, because I think, it was for pretty consequential years in my life. And so anyway, we'll go down memory lane, have some fun, talk radio, continue the conversation actually that we had the other day, yesterday, with on a totally different level with Cory Doctorow. So yesterday, I was speaking with Cory Doctorow about the internet and copyright laws and all that stuff and how things have changed since the days of terrestrial radio. And I know I'm dating myself. That's the world I come from. But things today are wholly different. Anyway, we will get back to that. Cory has already agreed. I told, you know, yesterday I said the half hour went by too quickly and asked him to please come back soon for a whole hour. And we already set a date. So it's a month from tomorrow, July 12th. But do you remember yesterday during the show, he said, we were talking about monopolies and antitrust laws and how they're not enforced. And he said, I know for a fact that there are at least five bills working their way through Congress. He said, I've read them. And I thought, okay, well, that's encouraging. Well, go figure. Just 20 minutes ago, if that, story breaks on the Hill. A House antitrust panel today unveiled a bipartisan agenda made up of five bills that would give regulators greater authority to rein in the power of the big tech companies. Ha, look at that. The bills put forward by the leaders of the House Judiciary Antitrust Committee follow a blockbuster report released by the Judiciary panel last year, alleging ways that Alphabet, which is the parent company for Google, Amazon, Apple, and Facebook abuse their market power. The report was approved on a party line vote earlier this year. Each of these five bills unveiled today includes a Republican co-sponsor. So this is encouraging. And sure enough, I tweeted to Cory, is this what you were referring to yesterday on the show? And he wrote back with one word answer, yup. So this is encouraging. I will post this article on the blog today where I post the show. It's at NicoleSandler.com/6-11-21 because today is June 11th, 2021. And that's how you can always find the day's show. I post them there. No paywall. My everything is open and free to anybody who wants to listen or watch. And yeah, I hope that regular listeners then go on to support the show, but that's how it works. Okay. So no paywall here. What else did I want to tell you about? You know, yesterday was so busy. I had all this stuff to talk to you about. And because we were so jam packed, I didn't have time to get to it. And so I got to share something with you. It's about the COVID vaccine, and it's kind of, you know, it's depressing that a lot of people are choosing not to get vaccinated because that's why things are finally opening now, because the vaccines work. But, you know, I saw a story the other night of this. It's the Houston Methodist Hospital in Texas. And something like well over 100 staff members. These are healthcare providers. These are medical professionals who are refusing to get vaccinated. And I just don't get it. I mean, if you're a doctor or a nurse, I would think you would know the value of the vaccine, right? I mean, it only makes sense. Well, you know, there's a crazy out there in every field, I suppose. So I want to share with you some testimony at a hearing in Ohio. You may have already heard this, but I got to go there anyway. So there's a doctor. Her name is Sherry Tenpenny. I couldn't make that up. So Sherry Tenpenny, a doctor, testified before the Ohio State House Health Committee. And, well, oh, hold on. I got to make sure I'm getting the right thing up here. So this is what she said about the vaccine. Just know that this is
bullshit.
Okay. I'm telling you up front, it is
bullshit.
All right. So I guess I have to do that disclaimer all the time because there are really stupid people out there. Anyway, let's hear from Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. Take it away, Doc.
Some of the information that I think had been discussed on your podcast related to EMF frequencies.
That
EMF
was a thought.
Frequencies.
And,
oh, it was
and
a thought.
Because now we're all kind of hypothesizing. I mean, what is it that's actually being transmitted that's causing all of these things? Is it a combination of the protein, which now we're finding has a metal attached to
what?
I'm sure you've seen the pictures all over the internet of people who've had these shots, and now they're magnetized.
Oh,
they can put a key on their forehead, and it sticks. They can put
really?
Spoons and forks all over them,
on their
and they
forehead,
can stick.
And it sticks.
Because now we think that there's a metal piece to that. There's been people who've long suspected that there was some sort of an interface, yet to be defined, an interface between what's being injected in these shots and all of the 5G towers. Not proven yet, but we're trying to figure out what is it that's being transmitted to these unvaccinated people that are causing health problems.
Okay, what could it possibly be? Well,
hey, NBC News viewers, thanks for checking out
Sorry,
our YouTube
Lester.
Channel.
Okay, I don't want to hear from Lester. But let's get up. There was a nurse who spoke at that same hearing. Let's hear what she had to say.
People. By the way, so I just found out something when I was on lunch, and I want to show it to you.
Okay.
We were talking about Dr. Tenpenny's testimony about magnetic vaccine crystals.
Yeah.
So this is what I found out. So I have a key and a bobby pin here.
Yeah. She's a key and a bobby pin there. Yeah.
Explain to me why the key sticks to me.
Because she put it on her chest and there's an angle there.
It sticks to my neck,
I put this on the chest. No, it's not sticking to her neck. It's falling off. And that's not sticking to her neck either.
Can explain this?
That would be great. Can explain that it's not sticking, idiot. That's the
Any
explanation.
Questions?
Yeah. Any questions? The question is, what are you trying to prove? Nothing sticks. But wait a minute. That's not the... Well, here, I've got magnets. And being that Mark Thompson is on the show today, I've got an old KLOS magnet on my forehead. I've got two Moderna doses inside me. Does not stick. Sorry. I have another radio station magnet. Does not stick, no matter where I put... Now, if I put it on my chest, it'll stay there because there's an angle because of the boobage, right? It'll sit there, but it does slide. Ooh, there it goes, slid all the way down. There's no there there. Sorry, lady. And these are medical professionals. But wait, we have one more doctor. So we heard from Dr. Tenpenny. Now it's time to hear from Dr. Three Nickel. Her name, Jill Three Nickel. Okay, Jill Three Nickel. What brilliance are you going to share with us now? Let's find out.
That's right. Not only do the vaccines make you magnetic, they can also make you thick, like an Oreo blizzard. There's one woman in my Facebook group who got the vaccine and now her blood is actually stuck. And so she's got to slap her bottom with a knife to get her blood to flow down to her toes so they don't fall off like she's ketchup in a glass bottle. Okay. And that really makes you wonder like what's going on, you know? I mean, and also a lot of people don't know this. There is a protein in the vaccine that attaches itself to the mitochondria of the cell.
To the
and
what?
When it comes into contact with 5G, if you have the vaccine, you can start to understand frequencies that other people can't understand. And so there's actually woman who can understand her microwave. And so the beeps sound like screams, like the microwave's in pain and it needs help. But what is she supposed to do? Just not heat up her bang bang shrimp linguine? You know, because that's not fair to her. That's not fair to her. So I just have questions like, why does the vaccine expire when we leave it out, but it doesn't expire in our bodies? And why do we call it an elevator when it's going down? And why can we park in a driveway, but when I drive my car through the park blackout drunk, I get arrested for that?
Oh, I guess that's it. Dr. Three Nickel, also known as Blair Erskine, who is just hysterically funny. All right, so there's that. There is other news to share with you. So let me pull out my trusty thing. And again, my audio is not working here. So best laid plans and all that. I can't even play that audio. I guess if I need to play a clip, I can do it from here. Well, let me tell you about some stuff that has just happened. Breaking news. Merrick Garland, and you know I've been kind of perturbed with our attorney general this week over some of the stories that have come out of the things that the attorney general, the Department of Justice, is doing that I don't understand. There's a lot I don't understand. But... that said, Merrick Garland today, it was called a press conference, but I don't think he took any questions. So he delivered a speech. And in the speech, he said a few things, including this, that's very important, because the most important thing that we're dealing with right now is the assault on our right to vote. What's going on in states starting in Arizona and Georgia and Pennsylvania and wherever Republicans control the state government, they are attempting to enact these new voter suppression laws because they want to keep as many people from voting as possible. Because, again, you've heard this before, but I'll play it again. This is from 1980. Paul Weyrich, who was the founder of the Heritage Foundation, I believe, certainly one of the founders of ALEC, he said the quiet part out loud, and it's still their strategy to today. You can say it with him if you want.
Now, many of our Christians
practice
have what I call the goo-goo syndrome.
Good government.
Good government.
Yeah.
They want everybody to vote.
Yeah.
I don't want everybody to vote.
No.
Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
That was 1980, and that's been their strategy ever since. Now, there were a few good years, you know, they I want to say 96, but it might have been like 94 or 92, because I'm not very good with dates, but the Senate unanimously, basically, I think it was 99 votes, reaffirmed the Voting Rights Act. Until now, they're realizing that they can, you know, take your rights away. And this is something that the Department of Justice really should get on rather than, honestly, pushing falsified reports by the Trump-appointed inspector general who said that the clearing of Lafayette Park, so Trump could go hold up his Bible upside down across the street at a park, wasn't due to Trump, but because they needed to erect fencing. That, my friends, is
bullshit.
Again, it's just
bullshit.
You know it's not true. And the Department of Justice defending Donald Trump in the defamation suit brought against him by E. Jean Carroll, the writer who credibly accused Donald Trump of raping her. And he defamed her when he denied the allegations. And with Bill Barr as attorney general, how frightening was that? He decided that we're going to make the United States the defendant and not Donald Trump because he was working in an official capacity. No, he wasn't. When he's spewing his hatred, none of that was in his official capacity as president. It doesn't work that way, at least according to my book, The Gospel of Nicole. Anyway, so I've been less than enthused about Merrick Garland of late, and I have not been quiet about that either. Well, today he spoke, and in this speech, he said that the Justice Department would double the size of its voting rights enforcement section and direct the additional resources around the country to scrutinize current voting laws and practices, as well as new Republican-backed restrictions and efforts to review ballots cast in the 2020 elections. Here's a little bit of his speech from today. I guess it would help if I turned on the volume.
Today, I am announcing that within the next 30 days, we will double the division's enforcement staff for protecting the right to vote.
Okay.
We will use all existing provisions of the Voting Rights Act, the National Voter Registration Act, the Help America Vote Act,
okay,
and the Uniform and Overseas Citizens Absentee Voting Act to ensure that we protect every qualified American seeking to participate in our democracy.
Okay. Well, let's hope.
You have a fantastic essay on your...
Let's hope. I can't quite bring myself to truly trust Merrick Garland. Hold on. I'm looking at my Twitter. sometimes I tweet out things that I probably shouldn't do right before the show because then, you know, the Trumpers come after me, but whatever. Somebody just asked, will those antitrust bills die on the Senate floor? I certainly hope not. Did I tell you that? I'm back ass words today. I mentioned Cory Doctorow, who was on the show yesterday, and he mentioned 5 antitrust bills that he said he had read that were coming. I did tell you this. And so there are 5 of them. I told you, each has a Republican co-sponsor. And they would do things like prohibit tech giants from self-preferencing their own products on their platforms, targeting alleged anti-competitive behavior from Apple and its App Store and Amazon on its digital marketplace. I mean, this is all really good. And, oh, I did tell you, because Corey's coming back on the show on the 12th. So maybe by then it will have, you know, made its way into the Senate, let's hope. And, maybe it'll pass. You know, as much as we've been freaking out and pointing the finger at Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, obviously with cause, I did warn you a few days ago that those are only 2 that we know of who are staunchly opposed to doing something about the filibuster. Now we find out, sorry, this is going to make some people angry. It made me angry. Dianne Feinstein. Oh, yes, Dianne Feinstein is she now came out and said, if I thought democracy was broken, I would do something to fix it. But I don't. And I'm not in favor of getting rid of the filibuster. That's a paraphrase. I'm not reading a direct quote there. Really? That's really sad, because, again, as I said about Joe Manchin, if you say you won't. You know what? I wonder if yesterday's would play. I can't believe my... yesterday's are working. Okay. Huh. I wonder if I pulled something over from yesterday, if that would work. Let me try one more thing, because I don't have any of my audio at my fingertips the way I usually do. Oh, that one got cleared. All right. So the clip that I want to play is not there. But, Joe Manchin, when he was asked... you know, if he's still against dealing with the filibuster, even if it means curtailing our right to vote, suppressing the vote, he said, I'm not willing to destroy our government. But if you don't do anything to stop the other side from destroying our government, that makes you complicit, doesn't it? I mean, doesn't that mean that that you're complicit? You're as guilty as they are if you don't do all you can do to stop them from destroying the Voting Rights Act, which, again, in the 90s was passed virtually unanimously. And now they're saying, oh, we don't need that anymore. Shit, I'm really bummed that I don't have access to this audio today because Chris Hayes did a great segment the other day showing how today's Republicans, you know, people like Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham, are actually repeating the same bullshit that was said throughout the ages back in the day. In fact, here, I've got it. Here's a clip that Chris Hayes played. It's Martin Luther King back in 1963 talking about the filibuster. Have a listen.
The tragedy is that we have a Congress with a Senate that has a minority of misguided senators who will use the filibuster to keep the majority of people from even voting. They won't let the majority of senators vote.
Hello.
And certainly they wouldn't want the majority of people to vote because they know they do not represent the majority of the American people.
1963. Martin Luther King Jr. knew, and it's exactly what they're doing today, right? So, but that's not all. Here's another one. And I wish I had a quote from, Mitch McConnell from today, because basically what he's saying is he's not in favor of even the John Lewis Voting Rights Bill, which is the companion bill to the For the People Act. We need both of them. But the John Lewis, he's like, no, we don't need it. It's against the law. It's in the Constitution. Yeah, the 15th Amendment right here says, the right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. And Section 2 reads, the Congress shall have the power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. Well, obviously, we need the appropriate legislation because it's not being enforced. Mitch McConnell agreed with that back in 2006. This is McConnell in 2006.
We have, of course, renewed the Voting Rights Act periodically.
Yeah.
Since that time, overwhelmingly and on a bipartisan basis.
Yes.
Year after year after year.
Year after year after year.
Because members of Congress realize that this is a piece of legislation that has worked.
Hello.
And one of my favorite sayings that many of us use from time to time is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Oh,
my. And this is a good piece of legislation that has served an important purpose over many, many years. This landmark piece of legislation will continue to make a difference, not only in the South, but for all of America and for all of us, whether we're African Americans or not.
2006. What a difference 15 years makes. Because now Mitch McConnell's like, nah, we don't need to renew the Voting Rights Act, and we don't need the For the People Act, and we certainly don't need the John Lewis Voting Rights Extension, I guess. I forget the official name for it, which would restore the parts of the Voting Rights Act that were knocked down by the Supreme Court a couple of years ago. The preclearance conditions that were, if a state like Georgia, who's been guilty of voter suppression, wants to change their procedure, they have to get preclearance from the Justice Department in order to do it because they've showed they're complicit before. And so now Mitch McConnell's like, well, we don't need no stinking Voting Rights Act. My, how he changes his tune. You know who he's echoing now? Right now, he is echoing, hold on, now I got to find it again. He's echoing Strom Thurmond. Let me try it again. This is from 1957, in case you are wondering. Strom Thurmond explaining why, I guess we don't need voting rights legislation.
Qualifications based on race.
Well, under those circumstances.
We have none of.
You know, I told you the gremlins are out today. Let me try that again. Strom Thurmond from 1957.
We have, of course, renewed the Voting Rights Act periodically since that time.
And that's not Strom Thurmond. That's Mitch McConnell again. God damn.
Are you suggesting that your people down in the state of Mississippi encourage Negroes to register and vote?
Well, we have no voting qualifications based on race.
Well, under those circumstances,
we have none at all, and anybody who's qualified can vote.
And that's what Mitch McConnell's saying today, and that's not the case. All right. It is Friday afternoon, and I don't know about you, but I'm damn sick and tired of talking politics. I'm tired of all of it. I'm tired of being angry. So we're going to change the tone here. I told you we have a special guest today, and we're going to go back a few years. I first got to say, before I bring on Mark, that, you know, I only was with Mark and Brian for 4 years, but they were probably four of the most consequential years of my life. I always considered these guys like my brothers. They were with me through some really rough times. I was with them through some great times. And years went by. And now today, I look at the date. It's June 11th, 2021. 30 years ago, June 11th, 1991, I was producing the Mark and Brian Show. And I think at that time, it was the number one morning show in Los Angeles radio. And just this past year, Mark and Brian were inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame. And it was long overdue, an honor much deserved. And I feel great to be able to say congratulations in person to Mark Thompson. Hey, buddy.
How are you? And thank you.
I'm old, hanging in there, but old.
You know, it's a fact of life. I was thinking about this just the other day. I've got two grandchildren due. I got one in August and one in October. And those of you that are young and haven't gone through this, it happens so quickly. Right. And it doesn't matter how many people say it to you. Nope. When you're young, and how many times you hear it and you don't believe it. I'm telling you, it is the blink of an eye. And all of a sudden, I'm an old guy. But it is what it is. And I can also say that I'm lucky in that physically, I still feel really good. Mentally, I still have certain capacity. And so the age thing doesn't mean a great deal to me. 65, I feel strong. I have recently written down a couple of things in thinking that I used to have a fear in that I would be sitting on my porch at 80 in my rocking chair, and I would be looking back with regret that if I had done this, if I had done that differently, that I could have made it. I don't have that fear.
Well, because you made it, you know, you did make it.
I did. And I'm very proud of that because I came from a really, really small town of Muscle Shoals, Alabama, and I climbed the ladder of radio because that was my dream, to make it to major market and to be one of the best that I could possibly be. Mm-hmm. And to have done that and accomplished that is a huge feeling of pride and proudness for me.
Absolutely. And you should. And so, you know, it's funny. I have listeners to this show, which is mostly politics, but, you know, insanity too. I learned a lot from you guys. We have a listener in the regular in the NicoleSandler.com chat room named Proudskell, who I know lives in Alabama. And before the show started, he was in the chat room. And I asked him, I said, hey, do you remember Mark and Brian from Alabama? And he said, yes, they left my sophomore year of college from Birmingham to Los Angeles. So wow. Proud School's there. And I said, well, okay, cool. Well, Mark's coming on today. He's like, oh, cool. You know, this is, and I've shared other things with you. There's a guy, his name is Zach Timpson, I think, and he does like song parodies on YouTube. He's very creative. He's really good. And he grew up on Mark and Brian, and his dad used to listen when he was a little kid. And he's like, oh, I remember you from when I was just a kid. And we'd listen to Mark. And because his father was so into the show, he got into it. And now he's, you know, he does these videos. He's going to be on Broadway one day. Do you ever sit back and realize the impact that you've had on lives throughout the years now that so many years have gone by?
I think that that I do realize there were a lot of people who enjoyed what we were doing, primarily in the 5 years, the first 5 years. Mm-hmm. In fact, when I went into the Hall of Fame, I was talking with the director, the president of the Radio Hall of Fame, and he confirmed to me that you're going into the Hall of Fame not for the 27 years, but for the first five. Wow. And you were there for that, Nicole. We were doing, and we didn't mean to. We weren't aware of what we were doing, but we were creating a brand new kind of morning radio that only because nobody had done what we were doing before.
You're right.
We were the ones that went in and dethroned Rick Dees.
Yes,
and Rick
we did.
Was the best. He was the king of one-liner radio. He had the best writers, the best voice actors. He was the very best.
Mm-hmm.
But Rick had been on for 8 years, and just like anybody in entertainment, you know, if you're lucky enough to have your 15 minutes, enjoy it while you're there. But people do get used to it and they move on to the next pretty face. And we came in and we were a 180 of what Rick was doing. And it was one of the reasons we were able to win, because we didn't play him at his game.
That's right.
We did something completely different, completely new. And really, honestly, what we were doing was exactly, precisely whatever we wanted to be doing at that minute. If it seemed funny to us, we did it. And we were kind of in that Beatles phase where when they released that piece of shit Revolution.
Number nine.
I mean, what a piece of garbage. And everybody said it was genius. Well, it felt to me, it didn't matter what we did at that time, it was working. And then, of course, later, years down the road, it didn't matter what we did. Nothing worked. So it's just a testament to we were at the right place at the right time and enjoying every moment. I can tell you without qualification, I couldn't wait to get to the radio station and start another 4 hours of that insane, wonderful, joyous, creative time.
Well, me too. And that's the thing. You know, I wasn't there. I came to LA right around the same time you did. I moved out from New York. You and Brian came out from Alabama. And I was working at, I think at the time I was at, it had been KNX FM, and then it turned to KODJ Oldies, and I was the promotion director. But I was listening to what you guys were doing, and I was just, I said, these guys are doing something so different, so creative. This is so good. I got to work with them. Do you remember how we met?
I don't, but
I will. Let me refresh you. Disneyland? Please. Disneyland? You don't remember. We were at Disneyland. We didn't know each other then. I happened to be at Disneyland. You were there with your wife, Linda, with Matthew and Amy. Katie was not yet born. They were in the strollers, and I saw you, and I'm like, I got to do it. I just got to do it. I got to do it. I went up to you, and I said, hi, Mark. You don't know me, but I hope you will soon. I'm Nicole Sandler. I came from New York. I produced the Jim Kerr Morning Show at WPLJ. I'm working over at KODJ now. I need to be your producer. And that's how we started talking.
Wow.
Yes.
Well, I have to tell you, Nicole was with us in the white hot days where this woman as our producer would get 1,000 phone calls a day for, you know, because when you have heat, you know, you have heat and everybody wants a piece of that. And Nicole was having to filter through all of that. I don't even know how to begin to think that one person could do that job.
And think about this, Mark. It was 1990 when I joined you. It was June or July of 1990. We had no computers. The computers, in fact, were delivered to KLOS the day I left in 94. As I was leaving, the computers were being brought in. So I did all this without email, and we didn't even have cell phones yet. because cell phones were around, but they were, you know, you had a cell phone. I didn't, you know, so this was regular old voicemail on a regular dial-up phone because it was the olden days. We didn't have digital stuff. We would record stuff on reel-to-reel and use a razor blade and an editing block and splicing tape. Right. That's what we did. So, so things were even more complicated and we didn't have assistants for the longest time. We had a couple of interns, but it was us. And you guys, again, were doing something so different. And I guess you heard something in me. We started talking. It probably took 6 months from the time we first met until they finally brought me on. And then it was just, you know what? Like I said at the beginning, you guys are like my brothers. And we went through a lot. I'm sure you remember. It was maybe, I want to say like 92. So a couple of years into it, I was supposed to go see Paul Simon in concert. And I was taking Kevin Gilbert with me. We were going to go together. And I got a phone call. My father had had an accident. You remember this?
I do.
My father was pushed, had an accident, quadriplegic. And so I'm flying back and forth between L.A. and Miami dealing with my dad. And you guys couldn't have been, you know, more accommodating and better because we really were a family. Mm.
Yeah, I that's one of the things that we all experience whenever we're working, especially at a very high level. Real life doesn't stop. Even though your career demands everything that you've got and then some, real life will come in and knock on your door. And I think everybody has to be understanding of when those things happen and when they come up, because it has to be dealt with. And just like yourself, when I was losing my immediate family, they were 3,000 miles across the country. And, you know, you start dealing with someone, like you said, your dad, a quadriplegic, and there you are in L.A. and he's in Florida. It's an almost impossible scenario, but yet you do it. And that's just what real life is. It has to be dealt with.
You know, we dealt with serious stuff because we had these life events. I remember, you know, Linda taking the pregnancy test on the air for Katie and hitting the Marcone song, Things We've Handed Down, when we found out and the tears are running. You had your vasectomy live on the air. I mean, every part of our lives really were laid open. And I think that's one of the reasons why the show was so successful, is because we had no secrets. Everything that we talked about, and we talked about everything, was fodder. And, you know, one of the moments I'll always remember, and I'm sure you remember it too, is a discussion we had. And I thought we were talking, you and me, before we went on the air. We went on the air at 6, but we'd be sitting in the studio before. And you'd say, how was your weekend? And I said, well, I took home those Sleeping Beauty books. You know where I'm going with this. The Anne Rice Sleeping Beauty books?
Oh, sure, yeah.
So Anne Rice, at the time, was very hot with Interview with a Vampire and all that, and somebody had sent us this box set. She had written, under a pseudonym, A.N. Rockwellaire, The Claiming of Sleeping Beauty, and then there were two others. It was a trilogy. And it was very much adult erotica. And I was telling you the story about, I took one of the books on the beach because I lived right at the beach, and I was lying on the beach, and I guess I, between the book and the mound of sand beneath me, I had a kind of a physical reaction. Well, oh my God. Look on the screen. This is the, from the Los Angeles Times. I got to put it up on that screen. Los Angeles Times bestseller list from, what was the date here? It was 19, I can't read, it's too little because my eyes are too bad.
But I can't see.
Yeah, it's number 4 book, The Claiming of Sleeping Beauty by Anne Rockwellaire, a book that had been, it was at least 10 years old, and it gets on the LA Times bestseller list. And it was an obscure book that nobody had ever heard of. And because of this discussion we had on the air, that book goes on the bestseller list, and Anne Rice came on the show. Did a wonderful interview with you guys. That's the kind of power that radio had back then. I don't think it has it anymore because everything's so fragmented.
Yeah. Sadly, we were both in radio when it was great.
Yeah.
But radio went through a change. February 8th, 1996, Bill Clinton signed the Telecommunications Act.
Yes, he did.
And basically, there was a lot of stuff in there, as most of those things do. But what it did was two things that were damaging to the radio that I loved. It basically, the two things it said, first and foremost, any individual or company can go and buy as many radio stations as they would like. And two, the real damaging one, any individual or business company can go into one city and buy up to eight
radio stations. Yeah.
And that means that corporate, who had endless amounts of money and what they didn't have, they could borrow, not only bought their radio station, but they bought their competition.
Mm-hmm.
And it made it a very, and they found a much cheaper way to put out local radio, as opposed to what I fell in love with, which was personality driven radio.
Right.
You know, because if you listen to a top 40 station or a classic rock, there's a competitor. Both of them play the same commercials, the same promotions, the same songs.
Right.
The only thing that differentiates the two was the personalities. And it was that I fell in love with. And it was that I wanted to become. And sadly, the needs of the high profile personalities are no longer there. And everything that I built myself into became, you know, the phone doesn't ring anymore. And I'm not complaining. I was there when it was great.
That's right.
And I'm fortunate and lucky to have been there and enjoyed every moment of it. But I miss it and I loved it so very much. And it's like everything, it changes.
Yeah, it does. And it's changed so much. And I, too, and my listeners can tell you, I rail against that 1996 Telecommunications Act to this day. And in fact, it was just last month, the Supreme Court unanimously upheld the loosening of ownership rules. In fact, they loosened them up even more. So now that one company that could own eight radio stations can also own two or three TV stations and a couple of newspapers in the same market, too. The liberals, you know, Sotomayor and Kagan were in line with this. And I'm like, oh, my God, they have totally destroyed the industry that I grew up with, that I grew up in and loved.
Well, sadly, and I don't think there's many people who could disagree with this statement. Let's say you open a donut shop and your competitor is right down the street and they, too, were making donuts. And what made the world great and made it wonderful for all of us is that if you, as an owner of a donut shop, if you want to be competitive and make a living, you've got to make the best donuts in the world.
That's right.
Yours have to be fresher, better, bigger, less expensive than your competitor. And that's what made the world go round. And this Telecommunications Act kind of took that out of the balance, because not only do they own your donut shop, they bought that one down there. So they can serve you any donut. Doesn't matter. You're going to buy it because there's no other donut in town.
That's right. That's right. And people don't have to work as hard as we did. Or really, they skate easier now because there are so many different outlets and everything, like I said, is so fragmented. But, you know, I go back to how you said it. This show was white hot. I was there. You started, what, in 88, I think? I joined
87.
87. Okay, I joined in 90. I was there in 94. And during that time, you know, we beat Rick Dees and number one. And everywhere you went, I mean, it was Mark and Brian. Because it was radio. There was no internet then. This was where you'd go, and LA is such a car town. But part of why I think you guys were so successful is you were honest. When you said it was what made us laugh, it was what was funny. I always described you as two overgrown kids who get to play out your silliest fantasies. So, for instance, down the street that we were on La Cienega Boulevard, right in LA, Culver City now. If you go up just the other side of the 10 freeway, there was a Bob's Big Boy restaurant.
Sure.
And one of you, you used to call it Shoney's, because I guess in Alabama it was Shoney's, but in LA it was Bob's. And one of you noticed that Bob's Big Boy statue, excuse me, looked an awful lot like Elvis Presley, who happened to be a character on the show. Elvis made regular appearances and would burp and sing and do things. So one day we took our convertible Cadillac, that was their car. You had your special cell phone pack. This thing was enormous. It was like a remote broadcast thing that the engineers had built so you guys could go out in the car and broadcast. And this was the early days of cell phone radios. And they built this giant contraption. You got in the car, drove to the Bob's Big Boy, hijacked the statue out of the front yard, took it back to the station, and we transformed it into Elvis Bob. Now, people might be wondering why nobody was arrested or anything, because what they didn't know is behind the scenes, I cleared it with the restaurant and said, you're going to come and take that statue, and it's going to give them tons of publicity, and they went along with it for whatever reason. So we always drew on the talents of our listeners. They were part of the family, and there was a guy named Art, I believe, who was tasked with housing the Elvis Bob, the Bob, and turning him into the Elvis Bob, and so here is the Elvis Bob.
Oh, sure it is.
That is Elvis Bob. And Elvis Bob became all kinds of different things. Like we would do the Halloween drive-ins. And one year he was Franken-Bob. And one year, Dracu-Bob. You know, Brian was a skydiver. So we went out to California City and threw the Elvis Bob in a parachute out of an airplane. And thousands of people came out there. Or maybe it was Lake Elsinore. I you know, it's a long time ago. I get mixed up.
Well, my other favorite is we went to Vegas and we catapulted the Elvis Bob over the fountains.
Well, we did. And funny you should bring that up. So Caesar's Palace. Here's the marquee. It says Caesar's Palace, Mark and Brian. The next one says Evil Bob, because we transformed him into Evil Bob. Evil Knievel was there. Tom Jones was there. And then the third screen says Jumps the Fountains. And then here's a shot of Evil Bob in mid-catapult over the fountains at Caesar's Palace. Because it was there, because it was silly and it was fun. And you see how many people we had there? The guy, I don't know if you remember this, but one of the guys from Caesar's Palace came on the air and he said, we have more people here for the jumping of Evil Bob across the fountain than we did for Evil Knievel's jump across the fountains.
Yeah, I mean, that's a prime example of the stupid crap we were doing. We did it because we wanted to see it. We did it because it was stupid and because it could be done. And, you know, we were very clear about our love of David Letterman and Steve Martin. And, you know, David, up until the day he left, he did the dumbest things. Like one of them I loved is Jay used to do. Jay Thomas was a big legendary guest of David. And David did this dumb thing. Every Christmas, Jay Thomas would come back on the show. There was a Christmas tree set up with a giant meatball connected to the top of it. And Jay and David would take turns throwing NFL footballs at the meatball. And the one to knock it off was the king. Right. Why does it exist? It doesn't need to, but it was mesmerizing to watch.
Right.
The very same thing. David showed me that there was a place for stupid crap on the air.
Oh yeah.
And we celebrated that daily.
Without a doubt. You know, one more Elvis Bob thing, because this was my favorite and one of my, you know, one of my moments that I will never ever forget because it was just so epic. Elvis Presley was on RCA Records, but that didn't matter because in LA we had the iconic Capitol Records building. And so I don't know who brought it up. I don't know where it came from, but one of you guys decided Elvis always wanted to be on Capitol Records. Wouldn't it be great if we could take the Elvis Bob and put him on top of the Capitol Records building? That is a photo of the Elvis Bob on top of the Capitol Records building. And, you know, it's the guy at the time, the president of Capitol Records, was a man named Joe Smith, who happened, my father went to college with a million years ago. And I called him and I said, I don't know if, you know, I'm Willie Sandler's daughter. And he remembered and we talked and I pitched him on the idea. He said, let's do it. And we did the whole thing live on the air. We had to get it up the elevator in the Capitol Records building. And then the final part was stairs and he wouldn't fit. So someone brought a Sawzall or something like that and sawed off the base. And we, the whole thing unfolded live on the air. This was the kind of shit. And people would get to work and wouldn't want to turn off the radio because they had to hear how it came. And then the Elvis Bob sat atop the Capitol Records building, I think, for about a week. And you could see it from the 101 freeway driving down, you know, the Hollywood freeway. And there it was. It was epic. That's kind of stuff that, you know, you couldn't make up.
No, you couldn't. And why would you? But yeah, it was exactly what we did each and every day. It was exhausting and wonderful at the absolute same time. Stupid shit, stupid crap. We were known for it. We did it each and every day that we were alive and could. And Nicole just ran you through some of the dumber. So yeah, right there he is.
Yeah, but there was also some other like epic stuff. We got big name guests on the show because, you know, number one morning show in Los Angeles. So do you remember the Pete Townsend appearance?
I do. Pete came in and was sitting in there, and we had arranged it for it to be the largest guitar jam in the world.
That's right.
And we had a moment where Pete sat down and he had asked his handler, I don't remember the person's name.
It was Danny Bush from Atlantic Records.
Well, Danny was in trouble because Pete looked and asked why the crowd was out right there.
He had no idea.
Yeah, he didn't. He didn't know that it was happening. And so we had to tell him, well, we thought we cleared it, but everybody came to do a jam with you on the guitar. And luckily for us, Pete was in a pretty good mood, mm-hmm, and he agreed to do it, to go out. And so, as you can see, everybody in the audience had a guitar and Pete Townsend jammed with them.
They played Pinball Wizard, and it was the world's largest guitar off. So you can tell your grandchildren that you played guitar with Pete Townsend.
And I when it was over, this guy, this is right before we left there and came back into the building, this guy came up to Pete and he had this beautiful Yamaha, uh-huh, a gorgeous, mm-hmm, guitar. And he hands it to Pete and he said, if you would do me the favor, if you would please smash it and then sign it. Mm-hmm. And Pete, I mean, this is Pete Townsend.
Yes.
I mean, I took my son to the Hollywood Bowl to see The Who, and I got an erection when Pete slammed his guitar to the stage. But Pete took this gorgeous guitar and he looked at the guy and he goes, are you certain you want me? This is a
I remember that like it was yesterday.
And,
right.
And he said, absolutely, man, it would be my honor. So Pete smashed it into pieces and signed it. And the guy, I think, cried.
Yeah.
So it was just that kind of crap. Again, we were hanging by a thread there because Pete could have easily said, I'm not doing it. Not in the mood. Didn't know about it. I'm out. But he didn't.
Right.
I remember he looked at both of us and he said, it's OK. I'll do it. It's fine.
Yeah.
And we were all like, Jesus, thank God.
Right. And we had to get the music for Pinball Wizard because that's what the song we arranged that everyone was going to play. And he was totally unaware of it. Yeah, I'll have to give Danny Bush shit about that next time I see him on Facebook, because all us old folks are still kicking around out here. But, you know, as silly as the things we did, we also did some serious stuff. In fact, on the eve of the first Gulf War, we went to Saudi Arabia, teamed up with the USO and MGM Grand Air. And that was one of the most emotional things I've ever been through.
Yeah, it was also unique in that we jumped on the USO's airplane, mm-hmm, they were flying over with half of the airplane was stuff for the soldiers. And we kind of piggybacked on that. And I remember we landed in Switzerland to get gas. And we were told if we got off the airplane, we wouldn't be allowed back on, which, of course, means we got off the airplane.
It was actually Scotland. But yes, you're right. Scotland. Prescott Airport.
We got back on.
Yes, we did.
But yeah, and I remember it was intense in that we were allowed to be on the ground for exactly 4 hours.
Yeah.
Do your show and
get the hell
back
out
on the airplane. Yeah. And so it was a quick turnaround, and I did something that I found to be brilliant. Because it was such a fast turn, I wore my watch, which I never did, but I took my watch. And when the rest of the airplane would sleep, I was awake.
Huh.
I kept myself on the sleep schedule of California so that when I landed, I was still good to go.
Mm-hmm.
So while you guys slept, I was awake. While I slept, you were awake.
Right. You know, I kept a journal on that trip. And it was, you know, packed away. Years later, I found it. It was like the 25th anniversary of the war or something. And I pulled it out and posted it again. And I read it. I still, it brings me to tears. But that was the kind of shit that we did. And it wasn't just a goofy show. That was talking to soldiers who were, you know, stationed out there. And it was before the holidays. It was Christmas time. And we would connect them with their families back home. And it was, there wasn't a dry eye anywhere that day. And it was just so leaving, you know, closing the door to the plane and leaving those young men there was just heartbreaking. It was just horrible.
It was. And that was, you know, I'm glad you documented that, because that was, I think, the end of 91.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
I think so.
That what that year for us, we were doing The Adventures of Mark and Brian.
That's right.
So we were filming. We would finish the show at 10, jump in a van, go shoot TV, climb in bed at 11, get up and do it again. So it was an exhausting year. And that was certainly a unique and very powerful way of saying goodbye to that very powerful year.
Yeah, it was. And then, but it wasn't over yet, because we came back and we had already, I believe, done your birthday show, because we would do these ridiculous birthday shows twice a year for you in December and for Brian in May that were just over the top crazy. I was looking at video of one that I do. I have all kinds of stuff here where you, for whatever reason, really liked the Marty Robbins song El Paso. Mm. So we recreated the Rose's Cantina and acted it out and had horses come in. And one year we had the you're a big Andy Griffith fan. We built, or one, our listeners built the Andy Griffith Show jailhouse in the Fun Zone, our parking lot, which we call the Fun Zone. And we had Don Knotts come in. I mean, it was just a magical show. And at the end of the show, I think we put you in a car to go meet Andy for the first time. So
yeah. I went to the set of Matlock. Oh. I think you tried to get Andy to come down. He couldn't because he was shooting.
Yep.
But I met Andy, of all things. I was taken to the makeup room, and there he was, and I met him, and I had a chance to explain to him how much he meant. And, of course, he hears that from everybody. But as we were meeting and talking, his makeup artist was trimming his eyebrows with scissors. of all things, because, you know, you get old and you've got bushy hair up there, but he could not have been more gracious or wonderful. And that was a unique and special, wonderful moment. And so if I haven't said thank you already,
oh, God,
thank you for
I'm laughing because I could just picture you with what you're thinking with the eyebrow, thinking, all right, can I get a couple of the clippings? And there's a bit in here somewhere. Because everything became a bit. Seriously, yeah. Everything became a bit.
Well, it was that was a big, big year and very special to meet Andy, because, you know, even to this day, in fact, you'll enjoy this. I met on the program. I met Luke Perry.
Right.
And when it was first presented to me about Luke being on the show, I was very busy in the 90s and I didn't see Beverly Hills 90210.
Oh, wow.
Plus, I mean, it wasn't my bag. It's not the kind of show I'd see, but I was told that Luke would be somebody we should have on the show. So I agreed. He came in, I fell in love with him. And he and I were big buddies. And one of the main things we had in common was the Andy Griffith Show.
Huh.
He was as big a fan as I was.
Oh.
And we would do a thing where we would go for months and not speak. And then most of our communication was text. He would text me a line from the Andy Griffith Show. And the game was to text back the very next line that comes from that moment.
Oh, wow.
And neither he or I ever missed one.
Wow.
And normally it would be months. And our normal communication was real simple. Instead of calling and saying, hey, our communication was, I would get a text from Luke and it would be, Goober says, hey, and the proper response is, hey to Goober. And that would be it. And that would be all we would have. So, sadly we lost Luke, and it was such a shocking and saddening, way for it to go. But yeah, the Andy Griffith Show still to this day, a massive part of my life.
Oh, without a doubt. And of course, it's synonymous with you. And you know, one other thing is KLOS was a big rock station in Los Angeles. You and Brian were not exactly the rock aficionados. I think the station in Birmingham was top 40, right?
Yes. Yes, it was. And, I spent my entire life in top 40.
Right. So you really didn't know the music, and it didn't matter because we would play anything and everything. We had musical guests on from, we mentioned Pete Townsend. We had Crowded House. We had Lyle Lovett. We had Jackson.
Barry Manilow.
We had Barry Manilow is a friend of the show. He did the Christmas show one year, which was awesome. You know, people that you would not expect came on. And again, because it was a thing where, you know what, we're gonna end on the Progressive Voices Network in just a moment. So I'm going to say goodbye to our friends at Progressive Voices. Thank you for listening. You can come over to NicoleSandler.com or Facebook or YouTube or Twitter or Twitch and keep listening because I'm going to keep Mark for a few more minutes. But have a great weekend, everyone. We'll see you Monday. All right, so they're gone. Now we can really talk. Because everyone was listening, one of my favorite bits on the show, and I think you'll remember this one, too, because I think it's when you first met him. You and Brian used to play, you know, did silly things. And you did a game, who would you rather be? And you would, you know, would you rather be Sly Stallone or Kurt Russell? Would you rather be whoever? And it was always Kurt Russell. It always came down to Kurt Russell. And we wanted to get Kurt Russell on the show and couldn't. And somehow, I think his driver called in one day and I was talking to him and we set up a thing and I told him at what time is Kurt going to be in the car? And he said, well, we're driving to the studio at whatever time. And I said, all right, be listening because Mark and Brian will do the who would you rather be bit. If you can have him listening, maybe he'll call in. Here's the hotline number. And sure enough, he did. In fact, well, let's listen.
We're right. Going to be there.
I'm going to be there too.
Cameron DeMara.
That'd be your hometown.
That's my hometown.
So what can we help you with?
Well, we want you to get us up on stage because we're big fans.
Stephanie has to hold on. Kurt, can you hold on a second?
What?
Whoa.
Get out. He is
what?
Not.
He is.
Somebody do an invitation, right? Kurt Russell?
I'm really, is this, who have I got?
Mark and Brian here, both of us.
This is him.
Is this Kurt?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Hi, Kurt.
Hey guys.
Kurt, yeah, we want to be you, Kurt.
How you doing?
Well, we're good, man. How are you?
I'm tired. I've been fighting a fire all night long.
Oh, have you really?
Oh yeah. I was up. I don't know. I guess about to, here. Turn that down because I'm. Oh, this is terrible. Hearing myself. Nothing worse than hearing yourself.
We're on delay.
Fighting the fire all night. I got the house saved, and about three neighbors. We're fighting three neighbors' houses, and we got that saved too.
Jeez.
So it's been a long night. I'm on my way to work right now.
So your house is okay then.
Saved, yeah.
No,
got it
good.
Saved. And I was driving along here, and I flipped around and found the station, and I heard you guys. So I thought I'd call and say hi.
Well, Kurt, first of all, you should know that we, you know, there ain't nothing funny going on here.
Huh?
The reason we say what we say is out of admiration for you as an individual. There ain't nothing, you know what I'm saying, we ain't, you know, after
you. Gotta be kidding.
Yeah.
Now, listen, we never got our airplane ride.
No, we didn't. I noticed that.
So I'm back in town now, and so I want to make that available to you.
Well, that would be great. In fact, I left a special message on my machine there, Kurt, because I knew you'd be calling.
That's great.
And I guess you're busy or something. So you say you're on your way to work.
Yes,
where are you working?
I'm doing a picture. I'm doing a picture called Stargate.
Is that going to be a good one?
I hope so.
Who's in there with you?
James Spader.
Ooh, there you
Ooh,
go.
Oh, God, he's good.
James Spader.
Science fiction or something?
Yeah, sci-fi.
Yeah.
It'd be a lot of fun. But listen, I want to make a deal with you.
All right.
Because my makeup man is in love with Nicole.
Has he met her?
He wants to take her out, and he said, if you'll call Mark and Brian, I'll bet that they would set me up with
you. You know it. In fact, today's Nicole's birthday, so this is the perfect birthday gift.
All right, Kurt, here's what we'll do.
Okay.
Notice that Nicole has nothing to say about this. We're making a deal here.
We're dealing in women.
That's right.
All right, Kurt, if you will come on the program, sit in our studio and talk into our microphone for like an hour, we'll talk about whatever, your makeup man can have Nicole.
Dennis Lydiard can have Nicole.
That's right.
Become his personal property to do as he wishes.
And we've said this on the air, so it's inked.
Yep.
Do I hear Nicole
hour,
laughing in the background?
Kurt, if like you stay in the studio for an hour, then I go out with him for an hour. So it's like if you hang with us for a long time.
But it's whatever he wants. It's whatever he wants. He might have been bad. You might want
to
spank it.
You know what I'm trying to figure out right now?
Yeah.
What do I get out of this?
Well, that was what we were just going to tell you, Kurt.
See,
Nicole will put out. We won't.
maybe Dana Delaney will call on the phone when I'm there.
There you go.
Okay, well, we'll have to work the hour out.
Hey, how's that Western? How's that
Western?
Okay,
so that happened. You hung up. It went. That was hysterical, right? So he comes in a couple of weeks later, whatever. I went out with the makeup artist. It didn't hit it off. Nice guy and all, but it was not a thing. But Kurt still came on the show. And when he left, do you recall what happened?
No.
Okay. Well, oh, good. This is fun because I get to see your face. So this is after Kurt left. He just left the studio.
Nicole, at the end of the Kurt Russell interview, we are in commercials. Switchboarder. This is unbeknownst. She had worked this out ahead
but
of time.
I did not.
Hang on. She must have worked this out ahead of time on the side. Switchboarder had a camera with her. So Nicole runs over to Kurt with the idea of just saying bye. I heard her say, let me go say bye. Mm-hmm. So she runs over, and it was just like this. Kurt standing by the door. Nicole runs over. Thank you for coming.
But I did not. Can I have my side and tell you what happened?
I'm feeling Sluggo, a red ass coming on.
Sluggo comes in here. Okay, during the interview. Sluggo, I guess, wanted a picture with Kurt. He goes, I have a camera here, so if you want, we can take pictures afterwards. Fine. Okay. I was thinking take a picture with you guys. Okay. I went over legitimately to say goodbye to Kurt. I hit the first commercial. I go over there. You guys are talking. I realize the commercial's running out. I come back around here to hit the next commercial, and they're just walking out the door, and I wanted to go say goodbye to him. I was going to go shake his hand, and it was a little kiss, and then Sluggo's there with the camera, so I turned around and took a picture, and that was it.
Done?
I had nothing to do with that.
Finished?
Yeah.
All right, this is what I saw. I saw you run up, take your left hand, put it behind his neck, and like try to pull him down
did
to your lips.
Not.
And he was like, he had his hands on your shoulder trying to push you away, because, you know, it's not that he didn't like you, it's just that, you know, we're just met, and you're trying
I was going to shake his hand, and it turned into like a kiss goodbye, but he was very nice.
Then you took your right leg and wrapped it around his, and you kind of tried to hunch him.
Well, yeah, I did that. Come on, you guys.
Photograph. Tell you, it happened in a split second.
Sluggo, he's the one who wanted the picture. I didn't even ask.
Did Sluggo get a
picture? No.
Who did
from
here a picture
from this studio?
I didn't ask for it.
Hang on a second. Hang on. Chuck, did you get a picture with Kurt Russell?
Not me.
Arlo, did you get one?
Not even close.
Brian, I know you and I didn't. Sluggo didn't. Nicole, did you get a picture with Kurt Russell?
Yeah, but I didn't ask for it. I just happened to
picture. Hang on just a minute.
We from this studio.
Did anybody in this building get a picture with Kurt Russell?
I'll sell you one of mine if you want a copy.
We saw at least three separate shots at him.
Yeah,
where you got him.
You guys them at least.
You got him once behind there, once in the doorway, and once in the picture.
At least twice that I saw.
Okay, so that went on for probably another 10 minutes. You started in with you got the red ass, you got the baboon ass, and just giving me all kinds of shit. And then
you deserved it.
Oh, I did not. Now. So, okay. So this is going on and on and on.
But, you know, we have to maintain a certain level of professionalism in here, Nicole.
I was being professional. I went over to shake his hand and say goodbye and thank you so much for coming in.
Yep.
That's not what happened. Sluggo's there with the camera. What am I going to say? No, I don't want a picture?
You know what I think is really funny about this?
What?
Is it Sluggo wanted the picture?
No.
It was Sluggo who wanted the picture.
That she really thinks we're meaning all this.
What? Oh, the hotline's ringing.
Uh-oh, maybe Kurt.
It is Kurt.
Put him on.
Hold on.
Listen, Kurt, we apologize.
We're very, very sorry.
I'm on my way in the building, but I just wanted to say this to Nicole. Mm-hmm. In that situation,
uh-huh.
I've never had better. I gotta go.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, guys.
Hey, Kurt.
See you later.
I love that. That is certainly one of my... It's just the best. And yes, and I do, and I've got my picture with Kurt Russell. Oh, and by the way, one thing that I cut off the end, because you know, it's time-consuming, but at the end of the thing, the first call, when you said, you know, good luck, stay safe in the house, he's like, oh, I was sleeping last night. I wasn't fighting any fires. He was kidding.
Yep. Well, it's also a dichotomy of what the show was.
Exactly.
In that we seem to be able to have the ability to have people like Kurt Russell, like Tom Cruise, Anthony Hopkins, to do things that they wouldn't normally do. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that we were real people having a good normal human being time. We weren't out to make fun of them.
Nope.
We weren't out to embarrass them. And I think that they, all of them, picked up on that and were willing to play along because they understood it was innocent fun. You just heard Kurt having a good time, getting involved in us giving Nicole a hard time. And he jumped in and played. And that really was one of the things I felt was the essence of what we were.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I wound up leaving because I was a AAA station. My music, Kate, was coming on the air and it was, you know, I was ready. I was just ready. But, I left a huge part of my heart with you guys and remained there. And you guys kept going for another 20 some odd years, which is amazingly incredible. Just absolutely incredible. And, I look back on my career. I look back on those 4 years and sometimes pinch myself and say, that was some of the best times of my life. I mean, truly, you couldn't make up stories like the ones we lived. And then you kept going with it. And you and Brian really deserved that induction into the Radio Hall of Fame. I'm just sorry I couldn't have been there to celebrate with you. Nobody was there to celebrate with you because it was COVID time.
Yeah, well, plus I thought that it kind of worked out because 2020 is, we were inducted October last year. Yeah. And 2020 was the 100th anniversary of the invention of the radio.
Right.
And the fact that the ceremony was on the radio, even though it was because of COVID, mm-hmm. I just felt like it fit.
Yeah.
In fact, I sat right here in the studio and did my induction speech, and I just felt like it fit.
Yeah. Okay. And I looked on the Radio Hall of Fame site because I wanted to get the little logo. I wound up not taking it, but they have class pictures from every year except for 2020. And then I thought, you know what? Glenn Beck was also inducted in 2020, and maybe you're better off not being in the room with him. But, you know, it would be nice to have that. I don't know if they're planning on doing anything special for the class of 2020 at some point.
Well, they said that, if we do have a ceremony in 2021, we would like for the class of 2020 to come. I haven't heard anything about that, but I did call Bill Summers and tell
our general
him that
manager,
if in fact,
right?
Yeah. And said he's the one that hired us at KLOS and made my goal of making Major Market come true. And I told him this many times. And I said, if we do go, I'm flying you and Joey in.
Nice.
I'm taking care of it. You will be there. You will sit at the table and you will be inducted along with us. And he said, I loved it. He said, Mark, I will go wherever you tell me to go. So if it does happen, he will be there sitting at the table and enjoy everything he deserves.
Awesome. Awesome. So now you're retired. You're living in North Carolina. You do a show. You have your own studio there. I love it. It's mnlstudios.com. When you were inducted into the Hall of Fame, you did a bunch of interviews. And I watched you with Sam Rubin, who was a friend of the show and was always good to me even after I left. And he said, and Mark is at mandelstudios.com.
I laughed at it too, yeah. Well, it is an odd thing to look at, mnlstudios.com. But I do the show once a week. I did schlep it where it was 5 days a week, and I just don't.
It's a grind. Let me tell you,
it is a grind, and I don't want that anymore. I've got grandkids coming. We're going to be traveling a lot more.
Awesome.
I've slowed it down, but I still do that. We did it this morning. I still have that one show a week where I get to talk into a microphone, and that gives me that need that I've got. You understand what I'm talking about?
I do.
I get it once a week, and that's plenty for me.
Right. And Linda gets to participate. You know, Linda was always part of the show. She was a family member and obviously a main family member. And we lived through, you know, the birth of Katie and all, you know, everything that comes with life, because it was, our lives were an open book. And so, and I think that's missing now. I don't think that exists anywhere on the radio.
I think it changed when radio itself changed. Yeah. And I'm sure it still exists in the world of podcasting or satellite or whatever the case may be. But it was, as you say, and I agree, it was a very, very special time to be living in Los Angeles and have a chance to be a part of that radio program. God knows I treasure and cherish those years, and you've been sharing these clips. It's some of the stuff I haven't ever heard.
Right. And you know what? As do I, Mark. And I really wanted to say it, you know, publicly. I'd been in radio before I met you. I mean, that's one of the reasons why you took me on. In fact, I'll pat myself on the back and say that Jim Kerr, the day it was announced that you and Brian were in the class of 2020 to be inducted, Jim Kerr, who hosts mornings still today on Q104 in New York, I worked with producing Jim Kerr and the Morning Crew on WPLJ in New York before I moved out to L.A. And he sent me an email that morning. He said, I think you might be the only person who has produced two Radio Hall of Fame morning shows. So I'll take that. I'll take that, absolutely. And be very proud that that I worked with both of you. And I learned something real from you guys. And that is, again, I had worked in news talk radio. I had produced a big morning show. I had been a disc jockey, had done all that stuff. But what I learned from you, Mark, was that it's okay to be real. That this microphone is the best lie detector ever. And if you're bullshitting, they can tell. This picks it up immediately. And so the best thing you can do is be honest. Be who the fuck you are. And my listeners will tell you, they've seen me break down in a major depressive episode.
I've seen it too.
I know you have. They've seen me laugh uncontrollably. They've seen me cry because it's real. And that's why we connect. And that's what works. And I learned that. I really got that from you. So thank you.
Well, you're kind to say it, but it is true. I learned a long time ago after I'd had my light bulb moment, which was a game changer for me. I started doing radio. Basically, before that, I was doing radio that I thought listeners would want to hear. And after my light bulb moment, I realized the lesson that I learned was to do what I wanted to hear. And you accumulate like-minded people who enjoy your crap. And it was then that I realized being yourself, not only in life, but on the radio, it changed everything. It gave me what the gift is that I was given, which was don't care what other people think or say, do your deal. And if you mean it, people will know it.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. It's absolutely what it is. Again, this thing right here, it will ferret out every lie. You can tell when someone's bullshitting you. And that's a lesson that has been ingrained in me.
Very powerful.
Mark Thompson, I thank you so much for doing this. It's been a long time coming. We've been talking about doing it for a while. And I'm so glad. I'm glad I get to, you know, really thank you, because it was an epic time in my life. And when I'd say that you were my brothers, you know, after my father got hurt, I used to have this fantasy that eventually when I got married, you and Brian would walk me down the aisle, because you were seriously, we spent more time together than most married couples do. And it was for those 4 years, that was my life. And I loved almost every minute of it, almost every minute.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that is also the bottom line. The truth being, yeah, we had some wonderful years and most of it was great, but it's still hard work.
Yeah.
The bottom line is to put on that kind of a show at the level that we did it. We worked. In fact, I'll sum it up this way. We got a listener, a guy who called, and he goes, so do you guys have like a job in the afternoon? And I cracked up because, see, this guy was listening to us have this wonderful, fun time.
Right.
And he couldn't imagine that we were paid to do that. We did that for fun in his mind. We had a real job in the afternoon, which is a compliment, quite frankly. But we spent 24/7 preparing many, 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 many hours for 4 hours that we spend on the air. And to do that, not only is it a blast, but it will tear you down and beat you when you don't think you can go any further. You do, and you do it for the show. So yes, it was great and horrible.
Mark, you've not met him yet, but my husband, David, is here. He wants to, you can bend down so he can see, or he's not going to see you.
He's not going to see me.
Okay.
Well, hello, David.
How you doing, Mark?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm pleased to meet the other man in Nicole's life. So my former best friend, long story, lives in California. And Nicole and I were out there several years ago, and we got together with him and a couple of other buddies of mine who I knew from college at Arizona State. And we had dinner at this restaurant, and they brought their respective spouses or girlfriends. And They hadn't, none of them had met Nicole. All of them knew me. None of them had met Nicole. And Nicole, surprisingly, for someone who has a large personality on air, is really pretty quiet in most social situations. So we're sitting there at the dinner table, and, you know, after several glasses of wine, someone says to Nicole, well, you know, what do you do? And she said, well, I'm on the radio. And she said, and they said, oh, really? You know, how did that all happen? And she said, well, I lived in L.A. for 15 years or whatever it was, and I used to be on, the you might have heard of, the Mark and Brian show. And my former best friend's significant other at the time goes, you were Nicole? Like, she wasn't Nicole any longer because she wasn't on the Mark and Brian show. You were Nicole? And her jaw just dropped. I'm telling you, it was like an out-of-body experience for this woman that she was meeting Nicole from the Mark and Brian show, but she wasn't Nicole anymore because she was no longer attached at the hip to you two jokers.
Yeah.
So instead,
well,
now,
she still is Nicole. I can promise you that.
Oh, tell me now, tell me about it. Now she's attached at the hip to me, and I'm the luckiest guy on the planet. But
good for
nice
you,
to
man.
Meet
good
you. I hope
good
our,
to meet you.
I hope our paths cross someday, and we can swap lies.
That'd be great.
We will do that one of these days, one of these years. And you know what? One last thing I got to say that I realized, you know, these days I'm all news and politics and stuff. In the 4 years I worked with you guys, we never once talked politics. We did go see Bill Clinton on the beach in San Diego. I don't know if you remember this one.
Oh, of course.
He was running. He wasn't even president yet. And he was doing a stop in San Diego near the Hotel Del Coronado. And some listener invited us and let us use their house on the beach. And Bill Clinton would go running down the beach every morning at the same time. And we went out there and ran alongside him with your mobile phone thing. And Dee Dee Myers, who wound up being his press secretary, you knew from Alabama. And she was a fan and she helped us with this stuff. But that, aside from that, we never talked politics. I, to this day, don't know what your politics are. I have no idea.
You know, the rule of thumb was, and I think probably still is for some entertainment based audio radio, is that religion and politics is a defining rod.
Right.
You know, you're talking to Republicans and Democrats and independents, and for you to step out there, especially in an entertainment forum,
right,
and say, this is the way I feel.
Right. It was not the right forum for it. Absolutely not.
Well, I mean, the rule of thumb is that you're offending half your audience.
Of course.
So why chance it? And so I'm not the most knowledgeable. Obviously, I know how I feel, but it really has nothing to do with what I was doing, which was trying to bring a smile to people. And I'll end on this note. Because it was such a great moment. I got into radio because I just wanted to be as good as I could, tell jokes, maybe make people smile as they traveled to work for their hour and a half, 2 hours in Los
in
Angeles
LA,
traffic.
Yep.
And I did that. And it was wonderful. And we made an appearance at the Orange County Fair, where it's one of the finest fairs I've ever been a part of. It's so well run, and we would have thousands of people that would come and stand in line to get our autograph or take a picture. And as it would sometimes happen, this entire family came up, a father and a mother and three beautiful little kids, and they were all dressed perfectly, which is always the mom. She dressed everybody, including the husband. And the mom and the kids did all the talking. The dad stood behind and just smiled. And his wife leaned over and said, he's a huge fan. He's just shy.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't say a word to us. And we signed their thing and off they went. And the event was over and I was walking to my car and I was approached by this very shy dad who didn't say anything. Behind him was his wife and his kids, but they were standing in the back. And there was a somber look on the wife's face that I didn't see at the fair. And I looked at the dad, and he was in the beginning of a level of emotion. And I was smiling at that point, and I stopped because I realized there was something that he wanted to say. And so I just went silent. And he said, I have listened to you guys for since the day you came on the air.
Mm.
and I've loved every moment of it. Last year, my mother got cancer. And every day I would drive to the hospital and I would brush the skin on her head where her hair used to be, hold her hand when she got her chemo injection. And I lost her in that year. But I wanted you to know that throughout that period, the toughest time in my entire life, the only smile that I got was you guys. And I welled up and hugged him and then walked to my car. And it was in that moment. And I heard that same kind of thing a couple of times after that. Yep. I just got into this to be entertaining and tell jokes. I didn't know that what we do for a living and what we do because we love it could actually help somebody in a time that they needed it. And that I drove home that day and I honestly grew up a little in another kind of weird, wacky. I became another guy. So it's been my pleasure to be a part of this wonderful journey and to have you as a part of it, Nicole, and for you to have me on today. It means the world.
It means the world to me too. Mark, I love you. You'll always be part of my life. And, I look back on that time. I can't believe it's been 30 years. I mean, 30 years ago, we were in that studio together and it seems like a minute ago. It goes by so quickly.
It was great.
And I'm very thankful that you're still in my life.
Thank you, sweetie. Good to be in your life. Glad you're in mine. The best to you.
Me too. Send my love to Linda, please, and the kids.
I will.
And
I will.
Hopefully we'll talk again soon.
I'll see you.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Mark Thompson. Wow. All right. Now I'm going to go have a weekend and keep going down memory lane because I'm stuck there. But wow. Great memories. And thank you for sharing it with me. All right. Bye, everyone. I'll see you Monday. Have a wonderful weekend.